You are listening to Stay Lifted, Sis, with your host, Loudmouth Brown Girl. For those who don't know me, I am Devin J. Hall, the Loudmouth Brown Girl. I've been the LMBG for the last five amazing, beautiful, weird, wonderful, crazy, mental health filled years. I am an author, podcaster, writer, blogger, and content creator. And today, my guest is my friend Tinu. Before we get started, we'll do our acknowledgement and our moment of silence. We respectfully acknowledge that I am blessed by the land upon which we gather, live, and connect. It is the traditional and unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Kwantlen, the Katsi, the Semiahmoo, and the Tsawwassen First Nations. We want to also acknowledge the Cree, which is the nation that is where I am from in Calgary. They are the nation that is predominantly out there. And I choose to acknowledge them in particular because I am 39 and I made it. And back in the day, many people who were Cree did not make it to 39. They didn't make it to 30. And so I just wanted to take a moment and acknowledge the Cree people. This show has a content warning for sex, childhood memories, cannabis use, and open swearing. So unless you want us to steal your children's soul, which we will happily do for the record, you might want to listen when they're not around. Tinu, my love, my darling. I get Tinu. I get. Am I saying your name right? Oh, we can't hear
I'm
you.
not,
There
I
you go.
was muted. It's Tinu. So you're
Tinu.
almost right. Yeah.
I'm literally dancing.
I love it.
Because when you first came across my timeline, my first thought was, all right, who's this bitch? Because since I started Loudmouth Brown Girl, it occurred to me I didn't follow any Black women. When George Floyd died, I was like, wait a minute. I don't know any Black women. Like, I don't just not follow them, I don't know them. Every woman I follow is white. And we all talk about the
Oh.
same stuff, but your ass is white and you don't understand how this particular moment has affected me, but you're all asking me to provide you with content on my emotions about this situation. So for the last, I keep going to like pull my hair back and realizing I have no hair anymore.
Looks good, though.
thank you. For the last 4 years, I have been conscious about following Black women. And when I found you, I did the whole who's this bitch? And then you were talking mental health, you were talking sex, you were talking being a woman, being a human, being a person from the lens of somebody who has dark colored skin. And I started to cry because I was like, there
Oh.
she is. I have, and I no joke, I know that women everywhere will understand this. I have waited to meet you since I was 5 years old.
Oh, thank
And
you.
you are the brown girl black fairy that I was told did not exist.
Wow.
And you are here now. So welcome to Stay Lifted, Sis.
Thank you.
Sorry for the long
Can I
introduction.
cry now? Can we stop so I can cry?
Well,
That is so nice of you to say.
you said it. You came out and you were like, I'm the brown girl fairy. And I remember this racist woman telling me brown girl fairies didn't exist. And I'm like, bitch, here she is. She is
I
right here.
mean, I took a picture of my outfit and everything. What else do they want?
Right. So tell us about you. What I want to know the fun stuff first, because we're gonna get into the heavy stuff. What in the morning when you first wake up, what's the first thing that like wakes your brain up?
You mean like the first thought or like the first, what are the first moments when I really know that I'm awake?
This morning, I was really conscious of it. For the first time in my life, I was like, oh, damn, I am fucking useless without coffee. Like, my mom will get up and she'll ask me to grab her bag. And so this morning, I got up, I grabbed her bag, I walked into the living room, I laid on the couch. Like, it was so automatic, right? And I
Right.
was conscious of it. And then I made coffee and I was fine. But so, like, what's the first thing in the morning that you have to do before you can have a conversation?
Before I can have a conversation with other people, I need silence. I need some type of moment to just be, well, to be, and then also to connect with the creative spirit, with whatever higher intelligence there is with nature. I need silence. I can't create without silence for whatever reason. And so I have a very rough time. Like if I'm awakened suddenly for an emergency, it throws my whole day off. Like I'm sure that's most people. But for me, I actually need, even if I don't meditate or do mindfulness or whatever, I need like 5 or 10 minutes just to sit there and kind of ground myself. And I just need a few minutes of silence. Like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get married because when I wake up, it's like I have the sentiment of good morning, but like, seriously, don't talk to me until I've been able to be quiet for a minute.
No, there's some
Especially.
training that has to go into that. Because like there's a boy, and the boy will not take no for an answer. And he's the ideal. He's sweet, he's kind, he's got the good family, he's got all the things, right? He's got the great job, could take care of me. I could sit on my ass, pop out babies, and we could have a beautiful life together, and that would be great. But that's not the life that I want because he doesn't shut up. He does not stop talking. He is gorgeous. Women all over the world love this boy. They all want to marry him. They all have fantasies. I'm not even kidding. He's super famous. But he does not shut the fuck up. From
I
morning
can understand
to
that.
noon to night, I'm like, bitch, you want me to spend 100 years doing this with you because I'm dying anytime soon. So this is gonna be a long, like, we need to like shh, bring it down. Have that moment because I feel like that moment of from waking up, we're on it in our dreams, we're in an adventure, right? We're
That's right.
playing dragons, we're flying all over the world. We need to just, oh, we're in a different world now.
Exactly. I'm back here again. Okay. So.
Yeah. Right here. At least though, it's, I will say, it's not the days of crap. I'm here again and Trump is still president. Like,
Oh, thank the Lord. Thank everything. Spaghetti monster. Whatever's out there that has prevented us from not having to go through that bullshit some more. Oh, it's never
I
not
do
good.
remember, and I want to know your thoughts. When on January, whatever, when Joe Biden finally took his oath and was officially president,
The
there
21st, I
was part
think.
of me that was like, okay, I can relax a little bit now.
The only reason I didn't have that impulse is because I was alive in the 90s for the mess that is being cleaned up that he was part of making, like the crime bill, like his earlier attempts to restrict our reproductive rights. You know, I remember a lot of how he was then, and I want to believe that he's changed, that he's matured, that especially his granddaughter has helped him become a different person. But I look at the people in my life that I knew when they were 40 and knew when they were 80, or that I knew when they were 4 and that I knew, know that now that they're 40. And there's some things about some people that don't just change just like that. And I mean, you can change, people do change, but there's a progression. They don't just wake up one day different. So he was my absolute last choice after
Oh no,
Sanders,
he
who I
was
absolutely
definitely my last
loathe.
choice. He was definitely, but given what we had at the very end, it was like, okay, well, if that's the choice, then
If
it's
he's what
better than
we've
Trump.
got, he's got to be better than Trump.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a moment of thinking, not my moment wasn't so much I can relax now, it's at least the fights will be fair. You know, at least I'll
Little bit.
be, you know, if I have to fight for something I'm up against, you know, it's crappy to be get up against the system, but the good thing about the system is that it is a system. There's a process. People can't just tell you, shut the fuck up or not listen to you or decide that you don't matter. There's, you know, laws and processes and stuff that they made up, and because they made it up, they have to abide by it. So say I want to, you know, tell the president that I feel like he did something wrong. I can write a letter and it might not get to the actual president, but somebody's job is to read it, tally it, and know that a
See, I
certain
thought
amount of
that
people
too.
had that problem. So
I
stuff
thought
like
that
that.
too. And I contacted Justin Trudeau's office and I was like, yo, let's talk about child sex abuse. And they were like, that's not his job. And I was like,
Right.
That is, and then the emails went missing from my email box.
Of course.
So as soon as I started talking about the fact that that was said, they disappeared. So I mean, I'm of two minds, like better than Trump, not the best that we could have done, because I'm not gonna lie, I fought hard against Donald Trump. Like I was out there
Oh, yeah.
in
Every
spirit,
moment of the day.
online, every day, all day, like as a Canadian being like, you cannot let this happen. And people like me and you, we get this title of keyboard warrior. Like, oh, you're so tough. You can talk shit on the internet. Bitch, my name, my face, my address, it's all out there. Come at me. I will
I
say
mean, people
today.
like to say, okay, keyboard warrior, but if that's the only weapon I have, I'm going to use it. I was bedbound during the Trump years, like almost his entire administration. I had to spend in bed. So, what am I supposed to do from there? And then also, people say keyboard warrior, but they spend all day on their computers. So, I'm the
Saying
warrior of
keyboard warrior.
you?
Yeah, right. Like,
Okay.
look in the mirror. What I love about you in particular is, and I'm gonna let you tell your story now, but given your story, you don't give up. Like, you clearly are refusing, and I think that that's amazing.
Well, I mean, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm a practical girl. I'm a Taurus. Like, I look at the alternative. I always look at what is the alternative. I could cry about my situation, especially the last situation I had about not being able to get my cancer medication. I had a choice. I could try to do something about it. I could lay there quietly and die, or I could laugh and die, or I could try not to die. And I thought, I kind of like being alive, and I got these four kids I'm raising with my sister. My mother's about to retire. Let's try and see if we can be alive instead. At least give it a shot, and it all worked out. But it's because I'm from. How do I put this? Well, first of all, culturally, I'm not as American as most people would think, as far as in the way my mind works. My people, Yoruba, were from Nigeria. There's a big cultural difference between how I was raised to think that, to think of how I could do things and what I could do in the world. My parents, my mother was part of like a kind of aristocratic family. She's related, she's got like, I hate saying it because people bring up the whole Nigerian prince thing, but my mother is legitimately, related to Nigerian royalty. And then my father's side of the parent of the family, he likes to say, "Hey, I'm just the commoner. She's the one with the kings and queens in the family. I'm just a nobody." But when he was coming up, people didn't immigrate to America. It was in, he was born in 1940. People didn't just leave Nigeria and go to a whole nother continent full of white people. Like, that's not just something that people did at the time. He was one of the very first people, if not the first, he and his friends, to decide, okay, let's go to other countries and try to make some inroads there. He went to school in Europe for a while. He and his friend, parted ways, where his friend went to European school and later became very important in the Democratic Nigerian government. My father decided to go another way and came to America. And when we last were in Nigeria, I went by where he grew up. And his whole entire residence, where he and his brothers and his sisters and his parents lived, is smaller than the bedroom that I had at the time. So it's like, looking at where my father came from, I'm not a person who just accepts what people tell me is reality. Like, how did my father, in that room from where he started, dream of this other place? I mean, it wasn't like they were completely penniless or something. Earlier than that, they lived in later on after that, my father's father was a pastor, and they had a nice house, and they owned part of Lagos University. They owned part of the land that Lagos University is now on, but had to sell it before they could become rich from it because of something that happened to my father when he was in Europe. And so his parents started somewhere and got to a certain point, and then my parents started somewhere and got to a certain point. And so then on top of that, it's the way we're raised to, focus on your studies. Why are you worried about racism? Because we have this whole insulation of our extended family and the culture that we're from to kind of help protect us from mentally from what, compound other people down who haven't seen, who haven't been in a world where you won't see white people for days and that black people, good and bad, are running and or destroying everything. I've seen and was sometimes raised or sometimes lived in for short periods of time, a world where everything was all the black people and they were everything from
I
like
had
the
that
guy
too
who
growing up
stole
as
your
well.
towers,
And
exactly,
it
to the
was
guy who
when I,
operated on it, you know?
yeah, when I had that growing up as a little girl, all the black people and all the Jamaicans who were like, you are a princess and you are to be treated like a princess and you do not let anything happen to you. And if something happens to you, you let us know and we go to war. Like that,
Right.
we go to
Real
war for
community.
our little kids. Being taken out of that situation because it was safer. And honestly, for my mom and my myself, it was a shock and it broke my heart because I lost that feeling of I am special and I am to be protected.
It's like you're physically safer, but you're not mentally safer. And
No stretch of the
people who,
imagination.
people who grew up thinking they're the default of the world don't see that when they're talking to us. Earlier today, I continued a conversation with a person, a white person who I'm hoping we're getting to know each other and becoming more friends. And there was, a controversy I was involved in with, I defended my friends against somebody who's being racist to them and trying to destroy their ability to do anything online. And for this person, that's the only option they have left is to make a living online. And this white person decided that they didn't like them and tried to take that from them by, spreading rumors and innuendo and denying that they did something that people saw them do in public. And my white friend was questioning, like, why are you against this person that I also know or follow? I don't know if they know them personally. And every time I said, okay, well, this happened, they came up with another thing. Okay, well, this happened, they came up with another thing, reason why I should disregard that. And I said, this is what we're talking about when we tell you that being, a black woman online in life is different. Like, everybody sees that situation with the lady who called the cops on the guy who was in Central Park and accused, when he was bird watching and tried to say that he was attacking her. And if he hadn't filmed it, who would believe him, right? But things like that on a smaller scale happen to us in real life all the time. And the white people in our lives will sometimes, I should say often, take the side of the other white person and not realize the thing that they're subconsciously doing is the same thing that's happening with the guy and this lady in the park. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You're not believing me because I'm black. You're not realizing that because I'm black, I can't just decide to ruin somebody's reputation. I can't just decide, that somebody is racist, so I'm going to call them out. I have to have proof, or I'm going to get run off the internet. And the internet's my only way to make money. So even if you don't believe in me because you've seen my integrity, you've seen that I tell the truth, you see that I read things before I retweet them, even if you don't believe me on that point, believe in the fact that I'm a black woman. And if I conducted myself the way other people do who are white, I couldn't be here.
Yeah.
And they just don't get it. They do not get the difference between being black and white. And they say they're pro-black. They say Black Lives Matter, but I'm a black life. Now I'm in your face, and the exact same dynamic is happening, and you're going to try to tell me it's different.
There is a section on loudmouthbrowngirl.com. I'm not even kidding you. I did this on purpose because exactly what you just said. when we are colored online, Asian, Jewish, Black, especially when we're dark-skinned Black, especially when we are dark-skinned Black, because there are moments where I look at myself now and I'm like, I look more Black now. And it's funny because Charmaine Fury from Militantly Mixed podcast, which you should all be listening to, said the same thing. She said when she shaved her head at about 39, all of a sudden she felt more Black. And I was, as soon as I did this yesterday, I was like, damn, I get it now. Because I went back the other day on waybackmachine.com and I looked for one of my old blogs that talks about some of the shit that I've been talking about. Childhood marriage, childhood sexual abuse, childhood sex trafficking, gang violence, all the stuff that I was going through. But when I was anonymous and nobody knew who I was, I wasn't Devin J. Hall, the
right.
brown girl. I was just Sin Denial. Like, everybody knew me by that name. They knew my blog. They maybe suspected that my story was true, but they weren't sure how serious I was about it because I wasn't like the big Black loudmouth.
Yeah, they didn't know
you yet. Go on loudmouthbrowngirl.com and you can find those archives now. They are there. Backs up everything I've been saying online for 20 fucking years. Come at me. Because I'm not doing it. I'm not like, I love my white friends. They support me. But if you for one second come at me and tell me a Black woman is scamming me, you bet your ass I'm doing my homework and I'm coming back with receipts.
Exactly. I want to see the receipts. I want to see the receipts because you're not going to just take down somebody because you don't like them.
And then pull me in on top of that. And like, one of the things that I love about you is you're a mental health patient. You're a mental health advocate. You're a mental health content creator. So you are a part of the mental health industry. So you cover the three main tenets that the mental health industry is supposed to be about. Taking care of patients and educating providers, right, is sort of what I think mental health content creators, that's kind of our thing. Tell me your story. Like, what had happened to make you go, okay, I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my life because I might not have much of it left.
Well, it's very, well, let me just preface this by saying the only reason I haven't written my memoirs yet, besides not having the time to take off from actually working to survive, is that I just don't think people are going to believe me. I've had a wild life. I don't think people are going to believe me. But one of the things that happened, excuse me, one of the things that happened in my 20s is that I was diagnosed with a cancer people didn't understand. And since at the time it wasn't making me sick, I didn't believe them at first. And then by the time I got to like my third opinion, it's like, okay, well, you definitely have this cancer, but we don't understand it. Chemo doesn't seem to help people. So you're not in any immediate danger, but you might live past 40. And then what's also weird is that usually old white men get this disease. So we're not even really sure if that's what's supposed to happen.
Can I just stop you for a minute there?
Yes.
Because I am so angry. They said the same thing about my mother. That usually, and I quote, only old white men get ankylosing spondylitis, which is arthritis of the spine. My mother is a white woman. And I just want to, for the audience, clarify that if you've ever heard those words, it might be the color of your skin, or it might just be that your doctor is a dumbass.
It might be medical prejudice from just the institutions of health.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, get yourself another doctor.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was young. I didn't really understand much, and I was already on my third opinion for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So I kind of took that and ran with it, you know, being young and not that bright, that okay, so I'm probably going to die in my 40s because the longest time that people have remission from this on record at the time is like 15 years. Right now, there's people with like 20-year remissions or 20 years, and then they never actually come down with symptoms. So because of that, I realized that if I had half the time that everybody else at the time, thinking my mother's side of family, the women usually live until their 90s. If I'm going to have like less than half the time that women in my family usually have, then I have to live differently. And if there's things to be upset about that I can't change, I can't worry about that because it's wasting my time. I don't have as much time as everybody else, so I have to live differently. If I have something that I can change, or I think that I can change, I have to get to it right away. I have to start working on it immediately because how long am I going to be here? I at least have to do enough so that somebody else can continue whatever work I do in life. And so that's kind of where I started from, as far as my mental health journey, because I was constantly dealing with this problem that most other people didn't have. I did have some problems that that other people did have around the time that I was 19. In college, I had this kind of, I guess, a mental block that I had about the abuse that I went through when I was younger. Kind of just, I was watching an episode of Oprah and she was talking about sexual abuse flashbacks.
Oh my God. Was it with Queen Latifah?
I think so. I can never clearly remember because as soon as I start to have the memory, it goes into the flashback sequence. So I'm not really sure I heard it. And I knew Oprah was on, but I didn't see it. And then like immediately that happened.
Oh my God. I bet you anything it was, because on that same day, mm-hmm. was the very first day I was 13 years old. Mama, I came out and I told my mom what happened to me on that same day because of that.
Oh, wow.
Episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the episode of the year. Let's see, I was 19 in college. It could have been later than 92.
Yeah.
So it was 1990. It's probably not 1991. I want to say spring of 1992.
I'm freaking out right now just because I remember that particular episode, standing in the kitchen, doing the dishes, hearing the voice and the story of Oprah explaining her story. And I remember standing there thinking, I wonder if any other little girls can hear this too.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here telling me you had a similar moment. And this is what I mean when I say
it's like a worldwide Oprah moment. Magic. Yeah. Yeah.
And the proof that magic is connects little Black girls everywhere.
Yeah. I believe we have some kind of shared, I'm trying to remember what, there's a psychologist, Jung, you know, Freud's rival, who said that we have the shared subconscious, or shared, I guess it's a shared subconscious, so that the mind isn't contained in the body, that consciousness is like bigger than we are, and that we connect to each other. I'm not sure how far he got in that, but that's where the idea started for me. And then I started reading other stuff about it, and especially by Black women and Black men who were naturopaths and their, you know, the village doctor, despite, you know, not having a degree. What are they called again? Like the witch doctors, for the lack of
shaman.
The actual shaman. Thank you. I was like, why can't I think of this word? Yeah, shaman.
Because in Nigeria, shaman means the same thing as it does in Canada, or mm-hmm. in Italy, or in Paris, or like wherever you are in the world, shaman means the same thing.
Yeah.
And just the one thing that like, that shocked the shit out of me about Black folk. I was like, wait a minute. You're telling me that the Druids had shamans, and then the Africans had shamans, and then the Iranians had shamans. So like, this is just a common thing, and we're just pretending that we're not all the fucking same.
You know, or also there's the, Diop in what is it called, Civilization or Barbarism, talks about the two cradles of one of the philosophies of how cultural information is spreading and culture start as well, as the two cradles of civilization theory, that, you know, wherever we once were together, we drifted apart because, you know, the once big landmass drifted apart. Like, because if you've ever noticed, if you try to if you the continents kind of fit together because they were all together at one point, which means we were all together at one point.
Yeah.
But the continents separated, so some of us went this way and some of us went that way. So after that split happened and we had our two types of civilization, the ancestral memory and the cultural connections that we had didn't completely sever. We just, according to our environment and according to our experiences, changed what came out of them. Like we ended up in, warmer, more temperate,
Yeah, screw
more
y'all for that, by the way.
abundance.
Is
Pardon?
it screw y'all for that, by the way? Y'all get Nigeria, we get
I
Canada.
mean, yeah,
Canada.
but
Do you know what it's
I
like
forgot
growing
what I was
up
going
in
to
minus
say.
3 degree weather when you've got black skin and you know in your heart you're like, my people are in Africa farming the land and I am climbing a mountain of snow to get on a bus. That was the
Yeah.
moment for me, the moment you were just talking about where you said the consciousness, that was the moment for me where I was like, somewhere out there are people who are living a completely different life
Yeah.
because of the color of their skin than I am living because the continent split it. And I just stopped you because when I first found you, was like, okay, let me investigate to see what you're about. Now I
Yeah.
heard you speak for a minute, and I'm thinking, you are so much more than I believe your followers understand.
Oh, I haven't even gotten to where, I haven't even tried to explain the depth or the breadth of who I really am. There's like I show this 8% sliver of myself online because it's so hard to for people to expect to accept, I'm sorry, that you can be two things, that you can be a person who is deeply spiritual and connected to the earth and,
And be a
benefit
person.
from shaman science, and
Yeah.
then also be an intellect in Western civilization. Like, people can't hold that those two things can be true at the same
That's a
time.
really good
So, like,
point. And I think part of it is because the internet has allowed us to connect in that way, to exchange ideas and to be like, hey, your family is from Barbados or Nigeria. This is what the ancestors believed. Did you know this? I did not know a lot of
Right.
the Barbadian traditions and no, and I still don't. I'm learning like barely. I'm just scratching the surface this week of what it means to have had people in Barbados, as opposed to thinking that my people only came from Jamaica. No, it turns out
Right.
there was like a whole life before that. And so connecting to that and then being able to have you on as my guest for the first episode back, I feel honestly the more that I connect to Black people online, the more I hear God's talking. Plural.
Yeah, I mean, and by no means do I think that, any race is superior to any other race, but I do think that some of our cultures have are more mature than other cultures. I do believe that.
I also think some of us have had more access to our history. White people in
Yes.
particular, whether you come from, and I'm going to be differential here because I want to clarify, I'm not speaking about all white people, but like certain cultures, Italians, Irish, Scottish, they keep their records of like where their people came from, what they believed
Yeah.
in, what they wore. There's a store in Vancouver here that has a book. If you have a tartan, you go back 5 or 6 generations for some families and find out what your colors were for your
Yeah.
color, your family. African people, Somalian people, Jamaican people, we don't have access to those kinds of records. So that's another way in which it's a little more difficult for us to find that information on our backgrounds. We are a little bit more spiritual because we pray a little bit harder that we can find. And
Yeah.
when we're praying, we're learning about people from Barbados, from Egypt, from India, from all over the world, knowing like I'm gypsy, but like my people started in India on my mother's side. My mother is English white. but she started in India,
Right.
right? And so I think Black people, we work a little harder because we need to understand a little more.
Yeah.
We have more questions.
And that, yeah, we have more questions, and that knowledge is protective of us, which is something that I don't think people really realize is, you know, if you're separated from your culture and your culture used to help contextualize you, then until you know your culture, you are operating out of context. So, you know, imagine Irish people with no sense of what Ireland is like. You know, imagine Italians with no idea what their dishes are. That's us in America if we don't have any kind of connection, whether it's something we were born with or something that we seek out. We're lost until we know who we are.
Yeah.
And sometimes the knowledge of knowing who we are and what we're from and what might feel more true to us and what might give us more cultural nourishment, for us not to know those things, is it can make our difficulties so much harder. Our journey gets so much more difficult. The difficulty is higher because we just don't, we're walking around without protection of culture that other people have, and not knowing that we're naked. So it's like a double problem.
I really feel like Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman would be very proud of you right now.
Oh, wow. I'm sitting here nodding, and then she said, be very proud. What, me?
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully.
Because I think there were two different kinds of people that saw that film. There was one person that saw that film and thought, oh my God, they're so hot. And then there were those of us that saw that film and went, no, they are talking to our ancestors through us.
Yeah.
This was for our ancestors. And I think based on what you just said, that they would both be very, very proud of you right now.
Oh, thank you. I really hope that they are. I'm only looking down because I forgot to order food for my mother.
Yeah.
just so you know, that's what that's about.
It's like, oh my God, she looks so sad.
No, I'm just looking down at my phone like, what the hell does she want to eat? You know, that's all. I have brain fog, so whenever we go off on a tangent, I forget what the original point was. So I know the original point was, like, where did my original where was my original connection to managing or being conscious of the fact that I need to tend to my mental health? Was that the question?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was the first incident, the sparking incident was knowing that I was sick. That came after the background incidents of being away from home in college, finding out things about myself that made me realize how different I was from other people. One of them was the remembering not even really remembering, just thinking about directly the abuse that happened to me and realizing that's not normal. That's not something that happens to all little girls, you know? So then how does that affect how I think and feel about sex? And here I am in college, and my ideas like of that are 6 years behind all the rest of the people here because of the things that happened to me.
Yeah.
I realized I was not going to get through that alone. So that was one of the first times that I thought that I looked for therapy, but it was really, my journey really, really kicked in when I thought that, you know, I was going to have as many years as other people. And that changed the way I did everything. So that's why I was kind of telling that story, because most people, especially if they know me from the internet, think that my diagnosis in 2016 is how I found out that I had cancer. I found out way before that, because it's a cancer that lays dormant and then goes active. And so I found that when I was early in my dormant stage, and I had to do the research myself because people didn't know about this disease, to figure out that, okay, well, if I eat this way, then that's going to help me not have problems later or push back the date. by which I start to get sick and die. There was no way for me to know or think in the 90s that I was that in 20 years and 30 years they're going to have so much better treatments, and then realize that this leukemia is more like a lymphoma, so that my survival rates go from 37% to like 85%. And average survival rate, because when I was finally diagnosed, I had like less than a 1% chance of living through the experience. And now I'm on my second fight with the active cancer. So it's been quite a ride. But knowing that I was sick already while I was young, and knowing that I could die much younger than other people, it made me approach my youth differently. It made me not want to get married and settle down and have kids, because I didn't know any women who settled down and had kids when they were 20s and who were living freer lives. And I also thought, is it really fair for me to have kids in my 20s or in my 30s and then not be able to grow up and see their kids? Like, is that a fair thing to do to another person? So, and then finding somebody and, having them agree to, yes, let's get married and have kids, even though we're not sure you're going to live long enough to raise them, like things like that. So because of that, I approached life in a completely different way than the people that I knew around me.
I think so, we concur on that, because for very similar reasons, no, let me rephrase that. I have very similar beliefs about mm-hmm. marriage to children for very different reasons.
Okay.
But they did stem around the thought that, like, I was not going to make it. I was trying to find somebody that I can marry and settle down with, thinking that they would be able to protect me.
Yeah.
But the older I got, the more it was like, no, I cannot put somebody else through what I am going through right now.
Right.
Risk having children go through what I am going through.
And then also, because we're women, having to take care of that person, whether it was a male or a female mate, you're expected to an extent to be comforting the people who are taking care of you as you're becoming sick or dying. You have to manage their feelings and their expectations. And I knew I didn't have the energy for that. So it wasn't just, for me, it wasn't just from an altruistic point of view. It was from a reality point of view. Like, yeah, I'm going to be 30 years old and half dead, trying to make my husband smile. It's not going to happen.
No, I had guys in my life who constantly were like, pick me, pick me, pick me. And I was like, dude, I am being abused in every corner of my life. Like, the last thing I need right now is to pick a guy who is selling dope and hanging out with gangsters. And like, this is not the life I want.
And how can I pick you? Like, how can I even actually make a choice to pick you when the things that are impacting me are changing who I am on the fly? So yeah. I pick you today, and then next year, I'm not the same person, knowing that my life is changing and I'm being traumatized at that rate. It doesn't, like, what? I can't even look at you real long.
So let's talk about what keeps you lifted. For me, y'all know this, it's a good joint always, and some music. I've really gotten into Latino music. This is because, now if my brother ever hears this episode, he's going to laugh his ass off. Manny Montana from Good Girls. Have you ever seen the show?
Oh, yeah. Everything but the last season.
Okay. So my brother comes into my house one day and he goes, tell her Manny Montana's coming. And I was like, why? He's like, because maybe then you'll start cleaning. Because I stopped watching the show and he knew this. Because Manny Montana is a dangerous man. It's
right?
A smile for me. It's the, he smiles and I'll be like, yes, daddy, anything you want. What do you need? Anything.
Yeah, be fine.
So I can't watch the show because I can't look at his fucking face, because then I will.
Right. Like,
shit I don't want to do.
I don't want to embrace the bad guy.
So what's the one thing in the world that makes you go, yes, mama, yes, daddy, whatever you need, I will say yes, because it's that tingle for me, that like, uh-oh, That pleasure center has been turned on in my brain, and if I say no, I don't get it. But I like that feeling of like how I feel in the moment of choosing something good or choosing something bad.
It was a decision I made, because when you think that you have a limited amount of time, and not when you think, actually, when, as far as you're concerned, you know that, you know, and then you've been raised on this very learn logic, be very, you know, self-educate. You're raised on knowledge to know things. You start to logic the whole thing about, okay, if I have 40 years, do I want to spend them miserable? Who does that serve? Do I want to spend them angry? Like, I could spend them very justifiably angry at the people who abuse me, but they don't get to feel my anger. I do.
Yeah.
So I'd rather, you know, for at first it was protectively not thinking about it, which is why I had that transformation when I saw that Oprah episode. And then it got to be to the place of dealing with it, facing it, healing it. Read a courage to heal, the courage to heal. Try to do something that will make you not be engaged with these thoughts so much, and will allow you to choose joy. If I ever have a choice, I'm going to choose joy, as long as it's, you know, an integrity decision. Like, if I see somebody hungry, I'm not going to choose joy because that person isn't fed. You know, I'm going to make sure that I can do something to make another person's life better if they're worse off than me. What I mean by choose joy is the joy picture is that person having food. You know, the joy picture is doing something about it. The joy picture isn't, you know, being sad because that person is homeless. I have to pick always in every circumstance what is going to have me have the best quality experience in life. And a lot of the time it's joy. It's do something that will make you happy. You could laugh about the situation, or you could cry. Either one is valid, and you have the power to choose. I'm going to choose joy. There's sometimes when I don't have the power to choose. The matriarch of our family, my grandmother, who I was close to, died this past July. I'm sorry, this past May. And it's just, that's not something that you just choose about. You know, there's no choice. I'm going to mourn her. I'm going to be sad. Bumps. I'm also going to be happy she was here. I'm also going to cherish her memory. You know,
part of that it's also a choice. Is remembering that, like, she was here with you. I never got to meet her, and I will never.
She could have been born anytime. She could have died before I was born, right. Like my father's parents. You know. Right.
So, what keeps you lifted besides choosing joy? What's that one thing that makes you go, "Ooh, I really want yes right now in this moment"? Besides, and I know that you have a lot of pressure on you because of your illnesses, but come on, there's got to be that one moment where you're like, ooh, that would just feel wrong and so right in the best way.
I mean, I guess sitting around smoking with my friends and watching, like, just having a good time with my friends while, you know, not only treating my pain, but having a wonderful time doing it, you know?
Yeah.
I do like to smoke and kick with my friends. That's like,
there's something special big joy. With your girls and adding cannabis into the mix and having those special sessions.
Yeah.
We call them sister sessions.
Call them what?
Sister sessions.
I'm not mad at that at all.
I want to thank you so much, Tinu. You have educated me. You have validated so much of the way that my brain works. And made me feel like I am normal and not a freak of nature. You are so special to me. You are so special to me and so approachable and lovely. And I cannot compliment you enough, and I will not stop because I want you to know how loved you are. You are.
Thank you.
I lost a couple of friends this year and I didn't get the chance to tell them how much I love them.
I'm sorry.
And it's the life that we live, right? Like, we're here for a short time and a good time. We're here for a long time, baby.
Yeah, but that's also why, you know, you probably noticed me saying I love you to people online, and some of them I haven't known very long. I don't think love respects time or has anything to do with time. We made up that concept. So I also think the love is abundant, and that I don't need to be stingy with my love like Beyonce. I'm not Beyonce. Like, so I'm always offering my love to people. like as a gift. You know, whether or not they love me back, that's cool. But I feel love, so I say love. My name means love. I'm all about love. So it's not a Hollywood I love you. To anybody who's listening and I've ever said I love you, it's not Hollywood I love you. I do sincerely mean that what I know of you, I care about and will fight for.
Yeah. And I will second that. I say I love you to a lot of people, and it's because I want you. Like, there is every shot in the world that I might have my brown girl bus one day, and I might come travel, and I'm going to come get you and pick you up, and we are going to smoke the fuck out of that bus. Like, it's going to happen. But there's a lot of people that I might not necessarily get on that bus. And so if I tell you I love you and you don't get the opportunity to get on that bus, know that I will be thinking about you as I am smoking a big fat reefer with Snoop Dogg.
For real.
And Tina. Like, it's going to happen. I'm sorry. I'm the one that fucking told Eminem he was going to be famous. I'm telling you now, I am going to come and get you. We are going to get on that bus with a bunch of brown girls, and we are going to sister sesh the fuck up. It's going to happen.
Good. As soon as, you know, the plague is over, come pick me up. I can't go outside in it. That's why I'm not traveling right now.
$20,000 is all I need. And if y'all want to support Loudmouth Brown Girl and the Loudmouth Brown Girl Magical Dream Bus, you can do so at loudmouthbrowngirl.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me. Do you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Do what you can from where you are. It all counts. It doesn't necessarily have to be activism, although I hope it is. I hope that you will do something about the things that are happening in your local community. But also just bringing happiness to the world and to other people. It's never too late to smile at somebody or to laugh or to tell an inappropriate joke or to smoke.
Amen to all of that. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody in between, I love you. Please stay lifted. See you next week.